Hello, and welcome to Saga 50 for 50 on Heritage Bites, produced by Heritage Mississauga. 2024 marks the 50th anniversary since the incorporation of the town of Mississauga, Port Credit, and Streetsville to create the city we now know and love. In this special celebration of Mississauga, we invite you to join us as we walk down memory lane with 50 weeks of podcasts recounting incredible moments in this city's rich history. This is Saga 50 for 50.
Hello, and welcome to Saga 50 for 50. My name is Justine Lynn, the Collections and Resource Lead here with Heritage Mississauga. Today, we are pulling out from our vaults, so to speak, an interview with one of the most influential women in Mississauga during the 20th century. Bernice Inmam Every was a well-known wildlife rescuer who operated the Winding Lane Bird Sanctuary on Mississauga Road for 25 years. Winding Lane became a destination for school trips where students learned how to care for injured birds and to rescue wildlife. One of the greatest joys of her life was sharing her knowledge and love of wildlife with others. She took over the running of the sanctuary from the world-famous ornithologist Roy Ivor, who established Winding Lane Bird Sanctuary. She was famous for nursing animals back to health when others said they would never recover. She never gave up hope, and in doing so, she gave us hope. In 1997, Heritage Mississauga had the opportunity to interview Bernice on her vibrant life, which was fortunate as she passed away in 2009. So today, we wanted to go back and listen to Bernice's story in her own words.
Okay, so we're going to start by asking you about the wildlife in Airedale.
Okay. It's declining, and people don't think it matters. When they built the college, are you going to college in Airedale?
I don't, but I have friends, several friends who go there.
They counted by air the number of deer. There were, I think, 300. Now there might be only 50, so it's declining. Yeah. And they think this doesn't matter, and maybe sometimes it doesn't matter to a certain extent. But you get birds that are endangered, like the pileated woodpecker. For the 35 years that I've been here, we've always had a pair of pileated woodpeckers, and they need a tremendous area, and they need mature trees. But we're cutting their trees. Mm-hmm. Okay. This year, I only saw the male. I didn't see the female. And the pileated, do you know the pileated at all?
No.
No. I should get my book out to show you. The pileated woodpecker and the ivory woodpecker, ivory-billed woodpecker, are almost exactly the same. The ivory-billed is now, they think, extinct. This last year, I think they found in Cuba, they thought they had a pair. So they closed off, I don't know how many acres of land where nobody was allowed to go in hopes that it would be all right. But I've heard nothing about it. Now, the pileated is the same thing is happening. We're cutting down their trees. They have to have mature trees. Now, what their job, I was telling you about the birds having a job to do in the tree, like the little brown creeper, he just gets those insects on the surface thing. And then the white-breasted nuthatch, he just gets on the bark of the tree, just gets the things that are just underneath the bark and things like that. Mm-hmm. But his bill is a probing bill, but it's not a power bill, a power driver. The pileated is a power driver. So there's a tree that is sick. It's infested with something that's going to kill the tree. He goes in, he takes chunks out of the tree like this, mm-hmm. And he gets right in and gets at those in those grubs or whatever they are that are killing the tree. And so that's his job to do. But he has to have mature trees. Yeah. And we're cutting them down. This place was all to be cut down. And I started the battle 35 years ago when I first came here to preserve this forest. And so so there would be some. Now the city's glad. The city in Hazel has been wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really been wonderful. Partly they think, well, Mississauga will become like Toronto, and it doesn't matter. But it's the fact that we're not taking care of our individual spots. Mm-hmm. And if everybody is not caring for their individual spots, and this is happening in South America. And the repercussions are so, they cause world problems, and but we don't think about this thing. And there are a few people thinking about it, but only vaguely, not saying, okay, if we protect what we have around us, then the whole thing will work out. But if we don't protect it, then we've got trouble.
Right.
So we have trouble here because the climate is changing. Things are happening in a lot of ways. Like even in the food we're growing, we get all of it from California. And, California could drop into the ocean next year. I mean, it's that touchy a problem. Mm-hmm. And what would we do here? We've got to protect what we have around us. Mm-hmm. So that's just one good example. And then the other example that the birds take their own spots, or the animals have their own spots. Even the woodchucks that we have here, they aerate the soil because they make dens underneath the soil, and so that they preserve the moisture underneath the soil so that it doesn't dry out. Mm-hmm. So they all have like their spots to take care of, and they do it well. Mm-hmm. This forest is balanced, and so that there are songbirds here, there's birds that do every job, there are animals that do every job. And as a result, it's a healthy forest. I have a front row seat and I can see what's happening. Then I see the natural happenings, how the fox is outsmarting the wolf. The job that the wolf is doing here. And they have problems with coyotes. The coyote is not a wolf. They're not even genetically the same. They don't interbreed or anything like that. This is a timber wolf here. Now, when they come, they take care of mice, rats, anything else that needs balancing. We had an overrun of squirrels here. So you'd say, what do you do about this? You know, we're overrun with them. And why are we overrun? One day a wolf came and he had to stay in the daytime because the squirrel doesn't come down the tree until the daytime. And he called them down to four, which is what is right. Then he left. So they don't kill off everything. Mm-hmm. They balance it. So that's the job that he did. And so, everything has this, it's necessary, very necessary. Now, the trees that we have, people cut trees down, they don't think about it, cutting mature trees down. But you need to have one mature tree like you do to give you the oxygen to breathe. You need, if you have a car, which you have, you need 50 more trees to give you the oxygen without the air becoming murky. Eh? Mm-hmm. So you need 50 more. You have a truck. You need 200. So you see how many mature trees are. And the city tries to fix this by planting trees, which kids go around and they break off and things like that. But they're not mature trees. So with the mature trees, all of these things happen. Mm-hmm. The pileated is maybe extinct in the area. Now, that pileated has all of the college and all of the gardens area. That's how big his area is. Eh? Mm-hmm. So what if he's extinct? And then they find out the trees are dying. They're going to say, why are they dying? That's why.
Yeah. How did you go about forcing the city to acknowledge what there is here and why the need to preserve it?
I didn't force them. I asked them. I told them. I explained what was going to happen if they did otherwise. So when this, all the land around here except this land was owned by a big development, they had this place all ready to cut down. They had all the things that were going to be houses everywhere. There wasn't to be a tree left here. So what I had to do was fight them by telling the city what would happen. And this is one of the few hemlock forests here. It has a lot of things that are there's only one left of it here, you know. And so the hemlock forests are endangered because of our air is getting worse and the different problems that are coming with the pollution are what we're doing. So I had to show them what would happen. And to do that, I got one of the professors at the university to give me a hand, and they were going to put a sewer line along the edge of the sanctuary, which would lower the whole water table of the forest. And they don't think about it. You can't expect people running the city to know everything. It takes people who have some knowledge to tell them. Mm-hmm. And Hazel, of all things, she's listened to people. Mm-hmm. And so if you have, I had to be very exact, though. I had to count where they were going to put a sewer line through here. I had to count every tree along the line and then say if they didn't have trucks coming in, which they would, mm-hmm. this would happen. If they had trucks, this would happen. And the domino effect that would happen when the water table was lowered, because the hemlock, one of the reasons why it's getting rare is that it has only surface roots. It doesn't have a big tap root that mm-hmm. can go way down, so that if the water table is lowered, it can reach that. So it would have this domino effect that one large tree goes and it knocks down the next one, the next one, the next one, because its roots are so shallow. But I had to point out every tree and what the root system was like, why it was important, why it was necessary, and how many would be destroyed even if it was no domino effect, mm-hmm. what would happen. So this way, and then I had to make this green belt right away. This was 35 years ago, and Hazel had been very good about it. And I have to point out the importance of it with the birds, what the job is of the birds, how our air could just be all murky like Los Angeles is now, or Mexico City, yeah. because of what we are doing. And it's a tiny little thing, and you don't realize it. And how can you expect able to know all of the angles unless she knows, but she listens. So when they did that, they wrote that up in Reader's Digest because it was the first time a single individual had fought a billion-dollar organization and won.
That's amazing.
So, you know, it doesn't matter what you do in life. If you try to better the things around you, it doesn't matter what it is, then the whole thing will work out. See, but you've got to do that. You can't destroy and destroy and destroy. And this is what's happening often.
Yeah. So how much area is there here in this forest?
Well, there's only 3 acres of sanctuary, mm-hmm. which is very small. But Hazel bought all around it. And I think there's probably 50 acres around a buffer zone.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped 3 times. I had to fight sewer lines mm-hmm. going through, 3 or 4 times. And they were even going to make hairpins around the sanctuary so I'd stop yelling. And I said, that's not the answer. The answer is the forest, it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
So they put about 50 acres, and then if we can keep control, you know, there's supposed to be gardens built up here, right?
Mm-hmm.
On Burnthorpe Road.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, see, a wolf can travel 100 miles a night, and they need the corridors. See, this is where the gardens area comes in.
Mm-hmm.
We need free passageway for animals all along here. So if we don't have the free passageway, it goes into a complicated number of things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
If people would fight more, I can only fight so much, and I really burned out with all the fighting for 35 years. And so things would happen, and Hazel looks at the gardens. Now, the whole thing is all important. There's great, beautiful trees, so we need these big trees. And so they want to cut down a lot of mature trees to make a parking lot. Now, there are other ways to do it, but I just can't fight everything.
Right.
And I'm hoping people will fight it, but I'm finding people are not fighting it. They want to kill off all the deer because they want in the gardens, they want the deer eat all the trilliums. They don't. No wildflowers are touched. That's why we have the wildflowers, because mm-hmm. they don't touch them. And so I don't have any decline in this, but you see that's what the gardens wanted to do. And unless people will speak up, and there aren't enough people speaking up, looking into it in depth and saying, no, make corridors for the deer so they can move in and out along the river. don't plant trees or plants that are just foreign plants. Alien plants, often those are the ones that fall victim to the deer. See, we had deer here, we had 300 deer, and we had all our forest, no problem, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But if we plant a tree from Timbuktu, and it's munched on, but they say, oh, the deer destroy everything. And this is not true. This is not looking into it in depth enough. Now, there's at least 200 acres up there. These are corridors from the north so that wildlife can move freely. And it's not looked into well enough. And there's a couple of other problems here in Mississauga that are not looked into. And they asked me if I'd do it years and years ago. And I just was too, you know, I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of birds here. And I felt I couldn't do it. And I couldn't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
there's a little spot there that should have been preserved completely. A developer got hold of it and now is really messing it up. And Hazel tried to solve the problem by giving some to the developer and some for to preserve that spot. And what's happening is that the animals are leaving. And the animals take care of the land, you know what I mean? So it's a complicated problem. But there's quite a bit. Hazel bought that area. She bought all this area around it. So she's trying in her own way to do the best she can.
Mm-hmm. Are there any groups in the area that are with the same cause or any other people who are helping you?
No.
No.
They do not help when hundreds of thousands are killed going on the migration in the spring. Those groups don't help. When they hit, in the springtime, we have a little bird called a warbler. Now, there are 50 species come up here, approximately. 50, and they're all colors. They're blues and reds and greens and yellows. And the job of those birds is to go through the forest and clean all the new growth. Each one there has their own individual spot, too. So some of them do another different. But they come, sometimes it can look like a Christmas tree here. Their job is to clean that part of the tree to keep it healthy and then move on north when they're migrating. So they have that job to do. And when they come up north, it's in the springtime, it's time when people go by the hundreds of thousands to go and watch them. And the groups go to show them, so they have a count, say, oh, I've got 100 birds. That's nice, and it's good that they become involved, but it's a very shallow involvement.
Yeah.
And so when they could be, when those birds hit the big high buildings in Toronto, in the morning, they go and sweep those birds up. Now, many of them have hit at an angle and they can be saved. And they have, when you think of the job they have to do, they should be saved.
Mm-hmm.
But these groups do not save them. So they pick them up and they throw them in a furnace. Hundreds of them. And they have to do them before people go to work because people get very upset.
Really?
So once in a while you'll get somebody, an individual who wants to help, and there is somebody now who's trying to help. But it's only a drop in the bucket. You need to have thousands of people,
right,
you know, involved in what's happening. CN Tower does one of the better things by having the lights go on and off.
Mm-hmm.
But if the lights are just left on, the birds are attracted to the light and they smash into windows.
Oh.
So, you know, but to say to people, will you do this? Or if they even have light shining down from above so the birds don't see them there, but they're shining on a building to let them know that there's a building there. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
Because those birds, those tiny little birds, have to stop in the daytime to eat. And so they have to fly blind.
So you were saying that the city has been more or less cooperative?
Yes.
Yeah.
The city has been very, very good. I'm terrified that Hazel will die. I feel that she's been the most honest mare we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
She listens. She can't know everything. And she can't know unless you speak up. But 2 years ago, I had four neighbors. They want this land. They want to be able to bring all their guests and everything down to wander through this wood. They can't. It's a wildlife sanctuary. I've got deer that come here to have their young because it's safe. And if I have people wandering all over, they couldn't stay. And so we wouldn't have them. Mm-hmm. So it has to be that way. But I have one neighbor who took down all my signs. I now have no signs there. He took them all down. I have another who poisons, you know.
But the trouble is that I don't speak out enough. I'm more reclusive than I like people very much. I have a lot of people come in here with injuries, and so I have a tremendous number of people that I like, and I talk to them and tell them if they're going to help with the bird or whatever, to talk to them, and I find out about them, and I like this. I enjoy people that way, but I need my privacy. And the animals need their privacy. Mm-hmm. So when I had started up here, I had an educational program, mm-hmm. and I had the medical program, and then the study program, the study of the animals themselves. Now the educational program had to go because I couldn't do anything, couldn't do it all. There was too much to do. But when I had that, I had tourists coming almost every day here. They'd be come by the busload. And people would come. They had to have so many mothers with a child, with so many children. And so they would come with the cars, too. So I had about 50 to 60 people with every tour, every day. And those children, I have them still, it amazes me now, I have them coming and with their own children, and they may have come in the pre-kindergarten, and they're told stories, because as we went around to all the cages, the ones that have been vandalizing, as we went around, I told them stories about, and these were not fiction, these were true stories, and how... what they do and what their needs are and what their personality is. And we had ones like Terrible Thomas, who was really a fierce, fierce, fierce red-tailed hawk. And the story about him, the children loved this. And this had more impact on the children than almost any other bird this one did, because they went away feeling that they themselves may do bad things, but their mother still loved them, their father still loved them, in spite of it. And I can see this when they come back with their own children telling stories, because they feel then that it's if you do something bad, it doesn't mean that everybody's going to hate you. You learn from doing the bad things as well as the good things. And so they would tell those stories to their children, and all of the stories. One man not long ago, it was 29 years ago he came. He remembers every bird, every story. I ran across one last night when I was doing research. It was 19 years ago when he came here. And they repeat those stories, so there's a lot of impact with it. And many of those go on as their life's work, becoming an ecologist or something. Mm-hmm. And one fellow was going to university, and he came over and asked if he could do a study of the forest here. And I said, yes. Certainly could. And he said, and could I help you with your work? And I said, yes, you can. And so when he did that, he became so interested in the animals that were here that he went back to university and he studied about the animals, and the forest and the general ecology was important, he also concentrated on the animals. And at that time when he came, I had a bird, with a turkey vulture. Have you ever seen those birds?
I've heard of it. I'm sure I probably
have. They have about a 7-foot wingspan. And I had one turkey vulture that was fantastic bird, highly, highly intelligent. And he used to come, and he used to come and help me when I was preparing food for the predator birds. And he would walk around with me, and then he would come in, and I had that trailer just, it's a write-off now with the vandalism that's done. But there, that used to be my feeding house there. And so he'd get up on the counter and he'd hold on to one end while I was cutting the meat for the predators. And he was the greatest bird. But when this boy was helping me, the trailer hasn't got a very big passageway to go down from one end to the other. And there was an invisible line that the vulture put there. And that boy was not allowed to cross that line where we were preparing the food. He has to stay on the other line. As long as he stayed on the other side, it was fine. The moment he would step across that line, this bird with his 7-foot wingspan would jump on his shoulder and just rip his shirt off his back.
Wow.
I got letters from him, and he went on with his life's work. I haven't heard from him for years now. He worked with polar bears, and he wrote me a letter, and he said, he told me about his work, and he said, but I've never been so terrified as I was when I was with Gaylord, the turkey vulture. So I'll show you, and they are ugly, ugly birds. But very interesting. And he's called a turkey vulture because he's got this red head, eh?
Yeah, it's pretty ugly.
Really ugly. And yet, on tours, he would make up, he had a form of hypnotism that he would work with people. And he would see from 50 feet away, he'd see the sucker he was going to have. It was always a woman.
Amazing.
And he would see them, and he would dance for them. And he's been left in wills. He's been have special food sent up for him because these people were so thrilled that this huge bird would spread his wings and look for them right in the eye, not looking at anyone else, and dancing. And the people would come. And they thought they were the only one. See, there'd be a tour, one person in a tour, eh? Smart as a sailor, you know, with a wife in every port. And he would take he would just concentrate on that person, eh? That person mm-hmm. thought they were the only one. One day, two women from two different tours came with special things for Gaylord, found out that he had other women that he was making up to. Now you wouldn't think that anything so ugly as this could do this to people. People have asked for his feathers because they had some of them even put it up to witchcraft and all sorts of things, you know.
Wow.
So it's interesting.
It is strange.
Yeah, but the most of the boys that we work here go on with that light in their life work. And this is great. At least I feel that I'm sending some people out
right.
who are doing something and doing something special. And they go out with the right attitude. That you don't kill off things. You don't kill off all the foxes. The foxes that come around in areas where they're doing this. Malton used to be, I don't know what it still is, full of rats.
Really?
Because we kill off the animals, we're taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
See? So it's a subtle type of thing.
So what do you think is going to happen down the road in Mississauga's few areas of wildlife?
For the future, I just hope there are some people who care enough to get involved deeply.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope.
How can people get involved? What would you suggest?
Well, what happened when I had the tours, then people were getting involved. Now, so they can. Now, what I'm working on right now is going up to see the editors of the Mississauga News. There's no point in me going to the Star or any of the others. I want to reach the people who are right here.
Yes.
So I thought if I could write and tell them stories, then they will begin to see what is what. They begin to see that it's important not to cut a tree down. They'll begin to see it's important to let the foxes have their own area to hunt the things that the people don't see. The large insects, the mice and the rats. You know, we have a compost heap now. One of our compost bins now, everybody. And this is creating a big problem. Because if people don't do it right, and a lot of them don't, we're getting mice and rats. People need to be educated more and more and more how to take care of their composting. But here in nature, we have something that takes care of that. So if I can write now, and you see, I want to stop taking as many birds as I can and hope that there's a place that can raise them enough. Then if I can write again. See, I had to start when I came here. I had no money to feed the animals, no money to feed the birds, and I had to raise the money for all of the food when I first came here. And it started out with a crow that I found, but when I came here with nothing, and I had to raise the money to feed the birds. To do that, I had to write, and so I wrote newsletters and I raised the money to do this thing. And so I wanted to go back to that and do it again, because I can't do the other. I cannot take care of I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of birds, from golden eagles, bald eagles, turkey vultures, hawks, and all the small birds. I had to have and I traveled all over to get the right design for a small bird. And I have it's a complete write-off again, an octagon that had 8 side sections, so you could put birds in when they were this stage, this stage, this stage, this stage, and a central one when they they were big enough and strong enough to get, and that's a 50-foot cage. It's a fabulous cage. And so I can't do that anymore. But I can now, instead of teaching them on tours, I can write again. That's what I want to do. So if I can do that, I think I can reach people again. And hopefully there'll be somebody out there.
Yes.
And I'm really tired of people saying, a lot of them now, they mean well, but they come here and say, oh, well, I was, in my work, I was making pottery, but I'm going to stop that, I'm going to have a sanctuary. And they think it's as simple as that. But there's a tremendous amount of learning. You have to be a speaker, you have to be a photographer, you have to be a doctor, you have to know all of the ins and outs, because every bird, every animal is different. So the people who come and they just take volunteers to look after them, they're doing better than nothing. But there need some really dedicated people. And I hope out there must be some.
I think so. I think a lot of people just don't realize.
They don't know. So maybe with my writing, again, it'll get people to understand the values. So hopefully. Then
out of there, somebody who reads the values, maybe there's somebody who says, okay, I will, this is what I want to do in my life. So hopefully. Oh, I don't know. I think maybe writing is the best way to go. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think definitely that's a good way to go.
See, people,
maybe educating children as well about the importance of in the schools.
Yeah, they that's what I was doing in the school. And you have to sometimes reach for way down to pre-kindergarten.
Yeah.
I had a girl, last year I bought ladybugs. And I went to, they had them for sale at, this evolved into a very strange thing. But they had them for sale at Loblaws. You get 1,000 of them for $8. And I said, I have no, and these are predator insects that are loved by everybody, eh? Okay, you know, ladybug, fly away home. I said, I don't know quite how to manage this, so would you tell me everything you know about it? Because I said, I've never done this before, but I feel there's a need for a few more predatory insects around. So she started to talk to me, and all of a sudden her face changed, and she said, and she was about 26 years old, I think I asked her at the time. She said, are you the bird lady from Mississauga Road? And I said, yes. And she said, I came when I was in pre-kindergarten. And she said, some children asked, I tried to leave out about Terrible Thomas for these little kids because he was such a wicked bird. But the stories go around. He was a story that went around. That was a story that went around everywhere, and other kids would keep telling it because it associated with them in a way. So she said, when the story came about Terrible Thomas, she said, I was so scared. She said, and she started to tell me the story that she heard in pre-kindergarten, and that has stayed with her all her life. And it made me realize that stories are the answer. But they, when they come, and those little kids come, and they go home, and often their parents want to come, and they're lined up waiting to be one of the ones chosen to come on the trip with them, because they have to have so many adults. They remember, then a hawk isn't just a hawk, it's a special personality. Or any of the songbirds are not just a little goldfinch, but they're a goldfinch that has his own little individual mind and personality. And they remember those, and they remember them all their life. So the way to reach people is through the children, too.
I think so.
But sometimes adults, their minds are made up, and they will not change.
Thank you so much for listening to the story of Bernice Imon Every, or the Bird Lady of Mississauga, as she was known by locals. She was a trailblazing woman who dedicated her life to protecting the city's wildlife and nature in a time before climate change and environmental concerns were a priority for most people, if not foreign concepts to others. Listening to her talk as well, I think it is just delightful to hear her talk about each and every animal as individuals. She knew these animals so intimately that her life was obviously interwoven with those of the animals that she cared for. Her pleas for us to simply care are so heart-wrenching. I hope that Bernice has inspired us all to educate ourselves about how we can best live side by side with nature and respect our natural environment and the animals within it. Thank you, Bernice, for everything that you gave to our city. Our Bird Lady of Mississauga. And thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Saga 50 for 50. This is Justine Lin signing off.
We hope you enjoyed this week's installment of Saga 50 for 50. Help us keep celebrating the 50th anniversary of the city of Mississauga by following Heritage Bites wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to check out Heritage Mississauga on all our social media platforms and follow hashtag Saga50for50 to stay up to date on all of Mississauga's 50th anniversary celebrations. This is Heritage Mississauga signing off. Until next time.